How to Become Fluent in the Language of Money, the Course to Financial Literacy. Every day we make decisions about our finances, and it's not just about the math. Our views of money are often laden with emotion, influenced by our past and informed by our attitudes about the future. We're also bombarded with messages from companies that want us to go into debt and feed our desires to consume. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on Main Calling, we're talking financial literacy, how to achieve it. Whether you're interested in making money, saving it, or investing what you have, it helps to have a basic grasp of the game, of the dangers, and of the greatest opportunities available in today's economy. What has the recession done to your bank account, and what can you do about it? We'll also learn more about efforts to teach our kids about money, the first steps toward financial literacy. First, this news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and you're listening to Main Calling. Do you know the difference between a 401k and a 403b? Do you know your credit score? Do you even know what a credit score is? Well, today on Main Calling, we're looking at what it means to be financially literate. We're talking about best and worst money practices and examining some of the dangers of today's economy. With me in studio, Michelle Broderick. She's Vice President of Marketing with the Cumberland County Federal Credit Union. John Paradise is Vice President of Governmental and Public Affairs with the Maine Credit Union League. And joining us from our Augusta studio, Mary Dyer. She's a financial education specialist with FAME, the Finance Authority of Maine. She's also president of the Maine Jumpstart Coalition. As always, we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on financial literacy? The number is 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Main Calling or post to the Main Calling Facebook page. Welcome all to Main Calling.
Great to be here.
We learned just this morning that the U.S. consumer confidence this month reached its highest point in nearly 7 years, boosted by strong job gains, according to the Associated Press. The Conference Board says the confidence index rose for a fourth straight month to 92.4 from 90.3 in July, the August reading the highest since October of 2007. And according, again, to the Associated Press, this optimism suggests that, John Paradise, Americans will be more likely to spend in the months ahead. This is a headline that is seen universally as good news. Confidence is up. Spending is just around the corner. How do you see it, and is there a double-edged sword to this?
Well, yeah, there is a double-edged sword, Keith, and again, thanks for having us, and you know, I think this is an important topic, and of course, especially a timely topic with today's news. Now, on one hand, I think it's great that consumers are confident, but they need to be cautious. There's a balance, and it's a very fine line between overconfident and not doing the right thing and planning long term. And it really comes, I think, down to instant gratification versus long term stability. And so I think it's great that consumers are more confident economically, but are they really able to sustain that confidence? And that's something that remains to be seen.
And Michelle Broderick, this is the kind of messaging that even, Wall Street, the government even to some extent says, hey, times are good, let's go spend. Spending is the answer. And so that's the kind of landscape in which many of us are thrust as we try to take a balanced approach to our own finances.
It's true. It's really hard for today's consumer to have that balance of saving and preparing for any emergency that might happen or their future, as well as buying stuff that they want now, especially when there's new phones, new apps, so all these things to help them. So we're really excited to be able to help Maine consumers deal with that exact conundrum.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff, fun stuff to buy out there. Mary Dyer, how would you assess, I guess, how, this is a difficult question to gauge, but the Maine consumer landscape. How are we doing in terms of our own, I guess, what you would call financial literacy? Do we have a good grasp as a group, we Mainers, on how to handle our money and plan for the future?
Well, I think most indicators tell us that in Maine, a lot of individuals are still challenged, both because of the economic situation that we face, but also because of the lack of education that we have available to provide us with that initial groundwork and the basics that we need in order to be able to manage our finances. So I think, you know, if we look at most measures, we see that most Maine families don't have sufficient emergency savings in place. Most high school students and college students lack some of the basic knowledge needed to navigate what can sometimes be a pretty complex financial system as they move throughout their life cycle. So I think we have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of great things happening in Maine, but certainly there are some significant knowledge gaps and limited access to some of the programs that are available.
And so, and I'll keep it with you for the moment. So do you think that these families who are still struggling from the aftermath of the collapse of 2008, do they have a good excuse, I guess, for still not having their financial house in order? Or can even people who are struggling to make ends meet, if we want to use that cliche, are they still in a position, if they have the will, to prepare for the future and set up some of these accounts that they can still do? Or do they have a good excuse?
Well, I think it is challenging when you're trying to meet basic needs in your household and in your family, significant debt issues, you know, for students who've borrowed student loans. I mean, I think all of those issues do present a challenge. But I think that all consumers, regardless of their economic situation, have the ability to make improvements. And it's really, if you think of it on a sort of a pyramid or a scale, in the sense that, you know, you might start small and not focus on big or large savings goals, that you'll start with a very small, you know, $500 savings goal. You start at, you know, trying to reduce some of the debt that you have. And so it's starting very basic and focusing on the fundamentals, and then building into more complex sort of investing, protection issues, you know, things beyond what families who are trying to make basic needs are focusing on. But I think everybody has some capacity, for some very limited, you know, to make some improvements in their financial situation. And for many, it just starts at the basic level of educating themselves on where to begin.
John Paradise, what would you say is the sort of the number one challenge facing Maine families as they try to get their fiscal house in order to move toward financial literacy, if you will? Is it still debt?
Well, you know, I think we hear so much about debt, and not all debt is bad, Keith. I think the number one challenge that I've heard and seen in my travels across the state, it still comes back to people have a significant lack of knowledge and understanding of what managing money is all about. And by that, I mean, they don't understand they don't have enough information available to really understand what they have for finances and what they have for expenses, and don't do enough planning. I think planning and money management go hand in hand. You know, a lot of people, it's, you've got it today, you spend it today, and what happens tomorrow, and, you know, that's a very short-sighted approach and oftentimes can lead to a lot of economic hardships.
So are you talking about savings in particular for a rainy day, or knowing that you're going to need new tires?
I think it's a combination, I think it's managing your debt and managing what type of finances you have coming in. I mean, we have a finite pot of money in your, you know, most households have a limited amount of money, and I think it's a lack of understanding on exactly where all that money is going to. You know, are you spending $10 every day to eat lunch out? Are you, spending unnecessarily for, you know, a cup of coffee instead of making coffee? It's when people finally take a look at what they're spending their money on, that's when I think they can get starting to understand how to manage money.
But Michelle Broderick, do people want to do that? I mean, I get a sense that I don't want to overgeneralize or paint other people with my own brush here. I'll talk about myself. There's a part of me that doesn't want to even look there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm too lazy or don't want to, you know, don't know how to do the math. It's almost like I just rather not look under the rock. Is that part of it?
I do think that's part of it. It's a hard look at yourself when you realize that you're spending $10 a day or more for lunch. If you're spending $3 for coffee, things like that, you know, most people know the math. They understand that it's going to cost more to eat out. But sometimes people need convenience, so I think that that kind of happens. We actually had a member that I was speaking with talk about the coffee situation, and his wife told him, you know, for 1 month, you have to track every coffee that you spend, that you use your debit card with. And when he realized that he spent probably upwards of $150 a month on coffee, it really kind of had that look that you were talking about, Keith. Do you really want to look at that? Some people don't, but then they realize I'm going to bring my own coffee.
Because, you know, Mary Dyer, there's a sense that if you're doing that, if you're pinching pennies, if you're looking at every penny, it's sort of taking the fun and the sort of spontaneity out of everyday life. Is there a sense of that?
Well, I think what we do is we try to encourage, particularly when we're working with young adults and college students, is to look at ways to divert that spending, you know, that unnecessary spending, what we refer to as spending leaks, in a way that, you know, is more interesting or exciting to them. So if you're unaware that you're spending $150 or $200 on coffee or, you know, counter snacks and meals each month, you know, that might not be where you would put those resources. It might be that you would use those funds to do something that you're more interested in, a cultural event, a concert, a sporting event. You know, it's not all about, you know, you put every penny away and save every penny and you don't do any of those things that are seen more, you know, fun, but that you're making choices and planning ahead to where you want that spending to go. I think one of the biggest things that we see, particularly with young adults, is a lack of awareness of the smaller purchases that add up over time to be big purchases, intended or not. But we also, on the other side, underestimate the impact of small savings over time that adds up to become a very large savings amount. So I think it's that planning and awareness that's most important along the way. And we find that, you know, a lot of high school students and college students, despite what we think, that they're disinterested and unengaged, that depending on how you talk to them about this and what you use for resources and tools to engage them, they are interested. It is something that they want to talk about and learn about. And you can engage young adults in that conversation.
And we'll talk more about getting kids involved and particularly educating younger adults in the next segment after we take a short break. But for the rest of us, John Paradise, though, what's the first thing that you think that I think you sort of mentioned budget is the first one. Know where your money's going, money in, money out, that sort of thing.
Right.
But I sort of shudder when I think about my sense of the fact that so many people in my generation really don't have a plan for retirement. They're just sort of crossing their fingers and hoping that, you know, things will come together. Am I overstating that?
No, I think, sadly, Keith, that that is the way a lot of people think. And, you know, I think part of it is a lot of people are afraid to ask. A lot of people don't want to hear the answer. You know, they if they ask somebody who's a financial expert, whether it be at a, you know, a financial institution or a financial planner, if they ask somebody, you know, what do you think of my finances? What do you think, you know, where do I stand? How am I doing? You know, the truth hurts sometimes. And, you know, ignorance is bliss with a lot of people. But, you know, I think you're not overstating it because so many people are afraid to make changes. And, you know, they think they just don't think they're up to the task of making the sacrifices. And as Mary said, making those difficult choices, and it may be painful. And for a lot of people, you know, I think long-term success can be painful and should be painful initially. But pain now and gratification later is really what, you know, what money management ultimately will lead to.
We'll get into some of the usable advice here in a moment. But Michelle Broderick, so as John's talking about this, it reminds me of, I think, what we said at the top, which is that this is not just about math, about adjusting percentage rates to get the maximum. This is a very emotional thing, mm-hmm. and we're affected. Our thoughts about money kind of reflect our thoughts about the future. They are informed by how our parents dealt with money. And it's clear that, you know, money is at the heart of a lot of family problems. It gets heated sometimes when mm-hmm. money's the discussion. So it's not just math. So how do we get ourselves in an emotionally good place to see the money conversation, the money planning session as a positive thing instead of something just simply loaded with peril?
Those are all such good points. And something that we've noticed, or that I've noticed, is remember that you're not the only one. It may appear that your friends, colleagues, people that are walking down the street with the really nice items or driving the fancy car, that they have their stuff put together. But remember that they have their financial issues too. You're not alone if you are struggling financially. Sometimes there's lots of assumptions based upon your salary, whether you make a lot of money or a little money, on what your financial situation is. People that make very little money can do a great job saving and purchasing homes and becoming debt-free, while someone that you think makes a large salary could have a mountain of debt that seems insurmountable to them.
All right, so you're not alone is step one.
Exactly.
And, let me tell you, you're not alone. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from you. The number is 800-399-3566. 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Doucette Survey. Committed to helping with your land surveying and mapping needs in northern New England, learn more at doucettesurvey.com. And Silly's in Portland's East End, open at 11 Tuesday through Friday and at 9 for brunch on the weekends with vegan and gluten-free options, sillys.com.
The Emmy Awards have inspired us to feature some of our interviews with great actors in TV series on the next Fresh Air.
I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No, I am the one who knocks.
We feature our interview with Bryan Cranston, who starred in Breaking Bad. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. As you may know, we're conducting a What Listening Looks Like campaign throughout August. Your fellow listeners are taking pictures of themselves as they listen to MPBN Radio and sending them in, and we're sharing them. If you'd like to take part, submit a photo of yourself listening to any of our radio programs, and we'll post it. Also, let us know your name and where exactly you are and what you're listening to. For every photo submitted, Hunt's Photo Video, located in South Portland, will donate $5 to MPBN. This is a really fun way to support MPBN, and there's more. The listener with the top selfie of the week, determined by MPBN, will win an MPBN prize pack. How to submit or see your fellow listeners? Well, that's easy. Just go to mpbn.net, click on the banner, or click on events for details. And thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, Understanding Your Finances, with me in the studio, John Paradise, Vice President of Governmental and Public Affairs with the Maine Credit Union League, Michelle Broderick, Vice President of Marketing with the Cumberland County Federal Credit Union, and from our Augusta studio, Mary Dyer, President of the Maine Jumpstart Coalition. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about personal finance that you're embarrassed to ask? Or have you taught your children, by the way, to be financially literate? Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And we have a Facebook message from Kyle, who writes, "I'm honestly illiterate when it comes to finances. I have a simple IRA through work and make about $18,000 a year and scrape to get by, but own my home thanks to my father and all my belongings, just have monthly bills to pay, no student debt, as I paid for my associate's degree out of pocket as I went. John Paradise, it sounds like Kyle's in not too bad a shape compared to many people, I'm assuming, of his age.
Absolutely. Kyle is definitely not financially illiterate. He may be lacking information and understanding of, you know, what he's looking for, but I think that comes down to, you know, what is success? What is financial stability? And right now, it sounds to me like Kyle's doing pretty well for himself. Maybe he wants to do better, and maybe that comes with, again, starting a conversation about what are long-term goals? What are your short-term goals? Where do you want to be 5 years from now? Just like you do in your career, you've got to do the same thing with your finances and have an evaluation, whether it's internal or externally, about your financial situation and figure out, you know, where you want to go to. You may be perfectly content with where you are.
You don't set out saying, I want to be president of the company. You say, I want to be division manager by the time I'm 30.
Right. Incrementally. You know, you're not going to get from $18,000 a year or whatever you have in your salary to $150,000 a year overnight. It comes with planning. It comes with you know, making wise decisions, making good choices. Same thing comes with your financial success. Wise decisions, good choices. And again, I can't overstate it enough, long-term planning.
Is there anything for a simple-minded person like me, Michelle, try to make your age and salary? Or, you know, are there any sort of things that you can hang on the wall? Or is it really more individualized than that?
Well, probably the best tagline that I've heard really is pay yourself first. When you get your paycheck, make sure you put 5 or 10%, whatever your salary is, put that away into a savings account, whether it's going to be a rainy day fund or for your retirement. It's really a good idea to pay yourself first because you're working for you and your family. So remember that and pay yourself first.
So you see yourself... Yourself, meaning yourself personally or your family first, not your debtor, not creditors. Or
exactly.
Whatever. Right. Okay, let's go to the phones now to Bucksport and Johanna. Hi, Johanna.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a woman of mature years, but in 1990, I had graduated from graduate school, and one morning I woke up and I realized that no one was coming. And for women, this is really important because I think, at least in my generation, I was taught that, you know, your husband or whatever is going to, that's not true. You're going to have to get a hold of your finances yourself. And so I cut up my credit cards, and the one that I kept, I put in a glass of water and I put it in the freezer so I couldn't get to it. I paid off all of my school debt, all of my debt completely, clearing out my savings accounts. And then I started a disciplined period of saving money where I couldn't get a hold of it. Direct savings from my paycheck into various Roth, so on and so forth. And it all paid off. The other thing that I started doing was writing down everything I spent. And at the beginning, it was torturous. But now, if I go to bed at night and I haven't done it, it doesn't feel right. And I know exactly what I spent and what I've spent it on every month. And it's such a relief to know exactly where you stand.
Now, Johanna, but you used the word torturous, and I bet there are people out there who are saying, yes, that must be difficult. So when did that start to change? When did you see it as something that you really needed or felt gave you comfort?
I think that probably came very fast, frankly. I think it was within a year and a half of doing that, and for some people that seems like a long time. But you remember, I've been doing this since 1990. So it happened fairly fast, and it's hard at the beginning. Any discipline is hard, but it was hard at the beginning. And I had to work through a lot of shame about money as well and what I was spending things on and so on. So I don't know if that helps anybody.
It does, Johanna. Thank you very much for calling.
She makes some great points. You know, until people are willing to look inward at their habits, you know, the needs, their wants, you know, what are they doing financially? Until they're willing to have that conversation with themselves, things aren't going to change. You can hear it from your parents. You can hear it from your relatives, from your spouse, from a financial expert, et cetera, Keith. But until you are willing to make that change and do that discipline like Joanna talked about, nothing's going to change. You may know it, but until you do something about it, you know, nothing's going to happen.
Mary Dyer, tell us about Maine Jumpstart Coalition and what it does.
Great, thank you. The Maine Jumpstart Coalition for Personal Financial Literacy is a nonprofit, all-volunteer network of organizations in Maine who work collaboratively to improve financial literacy throughout the state. So we represent 20 or so various organizations coming from private, government. We have school teachers who are represented, corporations, administrators, all who are dedicated to improving financial literacy with a special focus to pre-K to college students, including adult learners. So it's a great group of individuals throughout the state who are all working to promote financial literacy resources that are available.
So you're going back to pre-K.
Yes, yes.
And is that, talk a little bit about that. Usually when a program is created, it addresses a need, and the assumed need would be that there is sort of a lack of discussion or treatment of the issue of money among young people, other than when they get their first allowance or whatever in the fifth grade. Are we doing a disservice to kids? I mean, how would you assess how we're dealing with the issue of money and finances at these very young ages?
Well, I think that most parents, when talking to parents, will report that they are reluctant to talk with their children about money. It is still a very private issue that a lot of parents are not sharing that sort of information or providing that basic education. And so we see those early efforts in the classroom and through parents as being sort of that proactive, you know, providing the building blocks so that when they get into high school and into college and are making those first big financial decisions, we've laid the groundwork. But I read a while back that, you know, many students would rather talk with their children about the birds and the bees than they would money. You know, there are all of those, you know, emotions around that with their personal finances. And so it is still a topic that's not always discussed in the household, and there are organizations that, you know, are providing those resources throughout the state at a very early age to students.
I remember when I was growing up, money was only discussed usually with loud voices because it was an issue of contention. So money became something you argued about, and that can affect the way that, I guess, how we feel about money later in life.
Absolutely. Let's
go to Long Island and Joe. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Well, hi. Well, thanks for answering my call.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
You know, when we talk about savings plans, I just wanted to, I think something that I've learned, took me a long time to learn, is that savings really isn't, you know, giving up something, but it's really what you get in the end. And one of the things my wife and I finally learned to do was to set up, you know, apart certain monies for things that we knew would happen, whether it would be, you know, a major household repair, a furnace or a roof or a, you know, another thing for a car or to get out of town in February. And the credit unions and banks are more than willing to, you know, set up as many separate, you know, pay it and forget it kinds of accounts for, you know, designated purposes. And when those big things come around, it's really freeing to be able to think that, well, you're not having the argument about where the money's coming from because it's there already and that's a good thing.
So the message is saving doesn't have to be painful, I guess is what you're saying.
Well, that's right.
Because the peace of mind that you get and just the freedom from having to react to what could be, you know, major, you know, catastrophes, a furnace going in the house or a transmission in a car, that, you know, if you've been able to take some of that pain away by setting up designated accounts ahead of time, it makes the whatever kind of major processes come up a lot easier to handle.
Yeah. So what kind of accounts, John Paradise, are there? I mean, we heard Joanna early saying she set up accounts that forced her to take money out of her income. She couldn't touch it. Is that the way to do it? I mean, what are the options? What are the best options if you're having difficulty finding a way to set money aside? How would you go about advising someone?
You know, I think Michelle could probably talk a little bit more to this, but there are a lot of different accounts. There are holiday accounts. There are college accounts. There are vacation accounts, holiday club accounts, and they're still quite popular. I mean, you look at over the last few years, something that was big in our day, or my day at least, was layaway. It's returning. A lot of stores are now offering that. There's a reason for that. People like planning ahead when they're given the opportunity and when they understand the benefits for it. Joe made a great point that it doesn't have to be painful if you're getting something in the end. It's so much more relaxing to go on vacation knowing you've already got it paid for. You know, it's pay yourself first. You know, you're not having to charge everything and then, you know, at the end of the vacation, when you come back, your mind is more scattered and more stressful than before you left because you don't know how you're going to pay for it.
Now, Michelle, credit cards aren't as easy as to come by, although I'm seeing the mailers now coming with the 0% mm-hmm. interest offer and then the higher rate later. And then if you miss a payment, it's, you know, 30% or 29% or whatever the law ceiling is. It seems like that's coming around. It's, you know, it's back a little bit, I guess, if you would say. Is there a risk that we could go back to those old habits, or is it really just too hard to get those credit cards?
Well, I think a lot of things financially are cyclical. I think that for a long time, some of our grandparents were savers. So we're looking at how our grandparents lived. And our parents. So we see our grandparents were savers and were able to pay for things with cash. Our parents maybe used a lot of credit, or maybe we're using a lot of credit now. So we're trying to save, and cards are, they're definitely coming back.
Mary Dyer, this is going to seem like a strange thing to say, but was there a silver lining to the collapse in 2008? That is, did it force some people to get their act in order, to put away credit cards, to save, to, I guess, reset or reboot their thinking about how they live their financial lives?
I would agree that for some consumers and for some families that there was a silver lining. Now, the challenge with that is there was a significant loss, you know, with retirement savings and various savings vehicles, you know, that there was a decline. But at the same time, you know, the reduction in credit card debt and increase in savings and a greater focus on cutting back and, you know, reevaluating the family spending plan. So I think there's certainly for some, it, you know, was a silver lining, but I think there's also a significant number that, you know, the debt levels didn't change and if anything increased because of unemployment issues and, you know, various issues we've heard along the way. And our outreach efforts, you know, families who had to cash in their 401k to survive through those difficult times. And so certainly there's some of that, particularly in the direct-to-consumer area, you know, the credit card offers, you know, declined and, you know, some of that sort of stuff. But I think that's not an unfair statement that for some that it was a beneficial time period to sort of reevaluate.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about getting our kids up to speed on financial literacy, and we'll go back to the phones, and we want to hear from you as well. We'll go to Michael in Garland. But this is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Maine's public universities. When you think about your future, think Maine. Learn more at think.maine.edu. And Casella, dedicated to improving air quality for all Mainers through a commitment to reduce its carbon footprint, Casella. Giving resources new life.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is Alec Baldwin. The actor and producer is well known for his turn as the supremely confident cutthroat executive, Jack Dunnity, on NBC's 30 Rock. Join me next time for a conversation with Alec Baldwin on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
You can join us for that City Arts and Lectures program tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today's speaker is consumer advocate and former presidential candidate Ralph Nader. That's the Commonwealth Club of California coming up after Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, Financial Literacy. With me in the studio, Michelle Broderick. She's Vice President of Marketing with the Cumberland County Federal Credit Union. John Paradise is Vice President of Governmental and Public Affairs with the Maine Credit Union League. And joining us from our Augusta studio, Mary Dyer. She's a Financial Education Specialist with FAME, the Finance Authority of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call. The number, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. We go to Garland now, and Michael, welcome to Maine Calling.
Hello.
Hi, Michael.
Can you hear me?
Can now. Thank you.
I'm going to ask you a question about giving my 18-year-old son, who's now applying for colleges, and some of the colleges he's applying for are upwards of $60,000 if you pay full boat, which not many people do, but I'm discussing with his mom that we turn over a life insurance account, which I started for him when he was 4 years old, and which during the 4 years, by the fourth year he's in college, will have totaled, according to the cash value projections, about $100,000, which completes my legal obligation, but isn't necessarily all the money I would give him for college. But we're discussing giving him this account in Connecticut and New Jersey, where we have residences, and I'm not sure about Maine because I didn't ask. But in those states, at 18, he can legally be the owner of the contract and therefore have full control and sole control of the cash value. John Paradise, is that correct?
Yes, John Paradise. Yeah.
He spoke earlier of the finiteness of understanding the finiteness of your situation, especially given what you expect to spend. And I've tried in other ways to engage him with his allowance and keeping track, which is the beginning of financial planning, but I can't get him very far, and I certainly haven't motivated him to get to the end, which includes here are the things you're thinking of spending money on.
Sure.
So we're discussing giving him the account.
All right, well, let's go to Mary and ask her first, what's your take on Michael's situation?
Well, I think what I would encourage him to do, I mean, those are very specific, issues that his family is facing in terms of college financing and what to do with insurance accounts and various things. And, of course, the impact on, the college cost and financial aid. I would encourage him to reach out to the Finance Authority of Maine and have a very specific discussion about his personal situation. In general, when we hear from students who are pursuing higher education, we have conversations around, have you explored all of the various college options? Do you understand sort of the net price to attend each college that you're considering? And then what is your salary potential? What type of career will you be pursuing? And what is your salary going to be looking like? And that, helps to sort of sort out how much student loan you can borrow. But there's a lot of different issues that we talk very specifically with students who are facing paying for higher education. And that's really a one-on-one counseling where we can get into sort of the nitty-gritty and those finite details around how to pay for college, how to plan, and where to turn. So
that's a show in itself. And I know
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But I would encourage him. I would encourage him to reach out to his, if you're in Maine, reach out to FAME or to your state agency, or to reach out to the financial aid office at the school that the student is applying to, because they offer a wealth of resources and support as well.
All right, let's go to Margie in Jonesboro. Is it Margie or Margie?
Margie.
Margie.
Yeah, my little Margie. I'm always thinking of you. Remember that?
I don't, but no, but.
Hey, laughter's the best medicine, too.
Yeah, it is.
But at any rate, I ran the credit union at the University of Bridgeport for 6 years, and people would come in and pay their loans and all, and I would always tell them that make believe that you're a loan, and whenever you pay your loan, put that money aside, and you're paying you. And this way, at the very end, you have something at the very end. And also put some money under the mattress. I don't know. I don't know if that's a good idea anymore.
Under the mattress.
And you guys have hit it right on the nail. If they took a piece of paper and wrote everything down that you guys said, everybody would be just fine.
Well, that's nice of you, Margie.
And laughter's the best medicine, too.
Yeah, that's true. All right, thank you. Bye. All right, let's go to Bangor and Janet. Hi, Janet.
Hi there. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm calling because I think you've made some really great points about people keeping track of their finances and starting early on savings. And I think there's some really great tools online that people who are especially young and interested in, you know, using the internet can use. An example would be, and I'm not advocating this to be great for everybody, but an example would be mint.com or ineedabudget.com. And these can be really great tools that people should use.
Yeah, so technology is our friend in this case, mm-hmm. I guess, Michelle?
Yes, it definitely is. And Janet, you are correct with all of the tools that are online for people. A lot of financial institutions will have a personal finance manager linked right in with their online banking program. So you oftentimes all of the payments that you've made, all of the purchases that you've made from your account will be tracked for you automatically. So delve into your bank or credit union's financial online banking service because it's there.
So as Janet's talking about this, I'm envisioning the screen with, you enter and the number changes. It's all very cool and you can mm-hmm. watch it change and you're in complete control. But it just reminded me of a book that someone found in our attic of my grandparents, and it must have been my grandmother, who kept this beautiful account book, a journal of everything that was spent. And not only was it interesting historically, because, you know, bread was 5 cents or whatever in 1933, but it was just a beautiful accounting. I didn't get a sense that there was anxiety going into this this personal accounting. It was a beautiful book, and you got to see kind of how they lived their lives. It wasn't just how much they spent, but what was important to them at the time. And it became actually an historical account of our family. So I thought that was kind of cool.
And it can be fun. I mean, it doesn't have, talking about money and dealing with money does not have to be, you know, how many aspirin do I need after I do it? It can be entertaining. It can be very rewarding. You can feel good about it. Talking about the online piece, so many kids today are geared to everything, you know, online and learning. And there's actually a great program that a lot of credit unions offer called Foolproof, F-O-O-L, Proof. And that not only teaches kids about money and managing money and different games around it, but it also has modules for parents and grandparents to talk about money. It's giving them the tools and integrating them into the process. But there are all sorts of online tools and find a mix of not only online but in person. And you still can't go wrong with a writing tablet and a pen.
Right, but I'm sure that in the same way that your phone will tell you that you're almost about to exceed your data limit. That there is technology that will tell you, hey, you're exceeding your daily budget for coffee. I mean, I'm sure that's there.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is there. And you know, you have a choice whether you're going to listen to it or see it and do something about it, or you're going to delete it or ignore it.
Let's go to Lucy in Brewer. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. Your previous caller kind of took away some of what I was going to say.
Oh, well, I'm sure you have something to add.
Previously, children got home ec in school, and I notice a lot of low-income people especially do not know how to budget, do not know how to conserve groceries and things like that. So So I think teaching budgeting is very important. And as you say, you can find it online. You can find it anywhere. And the second part of my comment is, in Christianity, in Judaism, of course, we believe in a tithe. And it says in Micah that if you tithe, that the doors of heaven will be open unto you. You'll be blessed. And, of course, the Jewish people believe that if you cast your bread on the waters, it will come back to you multiple fold. And so I think charitable giving included in your budget is real important. And I just wondered if you had any comments about either one of those things, budgeting or charity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, budgeting, I'll tackle first, Keith. Budgeting is paramount to educational success, and she's right that kids used to learn it through business classes, through home economics, et cetera. A lot of those programs have gone away due to, budget constraints, and that's why, people like Jumpstart, people like credit unions and other financial institutions and entities are becoming part of the solution as far as education goes and getting kids the tools and the understanding necessary when they graduate to have a clue about finances.
Mary Dyer, are teachers in schools today equipped to teach kids about budgeting or issues of finance?
Well, I think a lot of the studies, there was a NEFI study recently that it indicated that teachers do not have, in reporting, that they don't have the preparedness to be able to cover all of the topics around personal finance. And because of that, one of Maine Jumpstart's primary focuses in the state is to provide training and support to Maine teachers, which we do through a statewide financial education conference that we offer annually. We also have an online training series that we offer and a variety of different resources. So that's really been our biggest focus, is to provide teachers with the training and resources and best practices and curriculum so that they can then take that information back to students in the classroom.
John Paradise, you said toward the beginning of the show that not all debt is bad.
That's right.
And we have a call from Kennebunk. Is it Kosia?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Kosia.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I just want to make a note that I'm joining now, so I'm not sure what was talked about with respect to good or bad debt.
That's okay.
I wanted to make the comment that in the past I have heard that, people refer to student loans as good debt, and I wanted to make the comment that that is very, very untrue. Student loans are actually the worst debt a person can have because they are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. So suppose that a student acquires, let's say, $100,000, $150,000 in debt from their college degree, and then they decide to do something different, or they're not employable, or they get sick, or, whatever happens, those loans are never going to be discharged. Whereas you can walk away from a house, a credit card, any number of other types of loans, except those.
Is that what you mean, though, John Paradise, when you're talking
exactly
about good debt?
That's student loans is, you're right, Kosia. That's not a good debt. The good debt is building up some credit so you can, lower your credit score or raise your credit score, I should say, so you can get a better rate, things like that. So you have some equity and you have a paper trail that's positive when you're looking to borrow money, or you're looking to do something with yourself financially. That's a type of debt that I'm talking about that can be good. Giving your kid a credit card in an emergency situation is not a bad thing. Having a low limit, letting them understand that you charge something on it, you've got to pay it off. You can't just go to the backyard tree and get some more money off of it. You have to explain it, but there is some debt that can be beneficial to you long term. But student debt is not it.
How much credit card debt should you allow yourself as a family with two kids?
Well, as a family with two kids, what would you say, Michelle?
not as much as I have.
No,
that's what I would say.
I don't think there's a certain number necessarily, but I think you need to look at whenever possible, paying off the balance at the end of every month, if at all possible. And if you're not at a level where you feel like you're managing your debt well, lower your credit limit. So then you can only go up to a certain amount. Don't have a card where you have $20,000 on it and you charge $20,000 on it. That's when you can really get yourself into a big hole, and you can, you know, it can take literally years to pay it off, and that's going to serve nobody well.
If you get in that position, you can go to a credit union and get a consolidation or a credit card loan and pay it off at a lower rate.
Absolutely.
But you'd have to pay it off in a certain amount of time, so you're going to have to be prepared to make those payments.
Again, hard choices, but long-term benefits.
A way to get out. Well, thank you all for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mary Dyer, president of Maine Jumpstart Coalition, Michelle Broderick, vice president of marketing with Cumberland County Federal Credit Union, and John Paradise, vice president of governmental and public affairs with the Maine Credit Union League. And we'll have contact information and other information on our Facebook page. John Keimel ran the board for today's program. Graham Morgan took your calls. And we had additional help from A.J. Higgins in our Augusta studio and from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. And you can find our podcast also on iTunes. Tomorrow on Maine Calling, a look at the creatures in Maine's oceans. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.